The Worth Report, featuring Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
The wealth gap is getting worse. A new analysis shows the richest Americans, the top 1%, made nearly 20% of all the available income in America last year. That's the widest income gap since the roaring 20s.
We'll take a look at the past, present, and future of the financial landscape and discuss how it affects you, your family, the world around you, and most importantly, your retirement.
The combined trends of increased inequality and decreasing mobility pose a fundamental threat to the American dream, our way of life, and what we stand for around the globe. I believe this is the defining challenge of our time.
This is The Worth Report. Now, here are your hosts, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
Good Saturday. If it's Saturday morning, it's The Worth Report. I'm your host, Nick Wharton, here with Glenn Wright, founder and president of Worth Financial. Each week, we'll bring you news that you can immediately use to manage your financial planning and offer commentary on local, national, and global events that affect your ability to sustain your financial future in these uncertain times. Glenn, how are you doing again this Saturday?
I'm doing pretty good, Nick. I mean, I tell you, it's a blessing to be here another Saturday morning. But, you know, I say normally, For the listeners who listen to this show, I always say I'm doing excellent. But today I'm just doing okay.
Really?
Yeah, man.
What's on your mind, man?
You know, just this show, man. This show was really what's on my mind. I know we're going to talk about income and wealth inequality, and it's a real problem. Some people don't want to deal with it, don't want to face it. But, man, I'm eager and excited to really talk about it because as a practitioner, I'm out here every day.
Yes.
And I see these people and I see... You know, we work with high net worth individuals and we meet with people who are not high net worth individuals. And it's a whole different walk of life.
Well, it is.
It is.
That's a good point.
And you know, for this reason, man, I'm very excited to talk about this show.
Yeah.
But besides that, everything else is going well. I certainly can't complain, man. Certainly blessed. And, you know, that's kind of where I am.
Yeah. So I've been so excited this week watching the Olympics, man. Have you seen these unbelievable performances, man? I mean, you talk about wealth creation. I just think about the how these young people's lives are going to be changed, having to be able to compete on this global stage and win gold medals or silver medals or bronze medals, or in some cases, just some real interesting human interest stories that are really going to take these young people's lives all over the world, to a place from some cases rags to riches, and it's just going to be interesting to see who really got your attention most this week. It's not over yet.
Yeah, I know. I haven't watched really anything, to be honest with you.
I've been
working so hard, but I'll tell you what I did notice is to your point, Michael Phelps. So he won a lot of gold. So
yes.
Is it 25 gold medals or something like that?
Something absurd like that.
Each one must be worth about $2 million because apparently he's worth about $55 million.
Is he really?
Through his endorsements and what he's won. In fact, it was interesting. I saw that they have a tax that I don't know if you know this, but if you win a gold medal, you win money. Like $25,000. If you win a silver medal, you win something. In a bronze medal, you win something. But they call it the Olympic tax. So, or the winning tax.
Huh.
So you have to pay tax on all that money. So if Michael Phelps is worth that much money, he's in the highest tax bracket. He might have to pay, you know, $15,000 or so in taxes. So they've tried to, President Obama's come up with a plan to try to take this tax away so that all this income is income tax free. It's passed the Senate. However, it's still in the House. So for now, all these folks, Simone?
Oh, yeah, I want to talk about Simone Biles.
I know.
Man. Whoa.
She's going to pay a lot of tax, isn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, I guess she is.
She
man.
Is a winner.
Yeah, she is. And I've even noticed these Olympic up and coming superstars have commercials and all that I see already. I didn't notice that in previous Olympics. I suppose it happened, but I just didn't notice it so prevalent. But yeah, Simone Biles, man, she did her thing.
She's really the real deal. So you actually saw her.
God, man, I watched this show, man.
I watched this.
And also, there's another Simone, the swimmer, who won gold. First African American woman to win a gold in swimming.
Wow.
It's just some wonderful, and it says a lot about the diversity of this country as well. So it's been interesting. It's always an experiment in diversity watching the Olympics because our teams are always so diverse, and you look around the world while they're great talent. I think we win significantly in the gold medal tally because our teams are diverse. that's the bottom line, bringing together so many diverse talents and skills.
Yep, I agree. I know. I think we're killing in the medal count. We have like double the amount of second place or something crazy like that.
Very, very, very good time to feel like you're an American. It's pretty cool all over the world. So let's dive right in, man. So you opened up with some commentary around your passion around what you do and how you help people create wealth and manage their resources. So today we're going to talk about income inequality and as well as wealth inequality. As we're in the presidential elections, and obviously just the other day, presidential hopeful Trump again changed his economic plan and launched some initiatives just the other evening.
In fact, we talked about his new tax plan.
That's right.
Was part of that.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So let's talk about why is this issue of income inequality it's catching so much heat these days. I know we're in Charlotte, and we've talked about our circumstance right here in Charlotte.
That's right.
Being 50 out of 50 cities for moving poor people from poverty to working to middle class. But this is a national phenomenon. What do you think about that, Glenn?
Well, I mean, the top percent has the majority of the wealth. The top 10% has 90% of the wealth. I mean, it is amazing to see the disparity between the haves and the have-nots. A big part of that is what we consider to be now the middle class. Before, and I grew up in Detroit. So in Detroit, people worked for Ford, General Motors, Chrysler. They could have a good living. They may have a high school education, but they're making enough in their hourly wage to be able to support the family, buy a house, buy a couple of cars, maybe even send their kid to a private school if they want to, not in the city, and then ultimately help them, or if not completely, pay for college. Mm. So, and then at the end of the day, they retire very comfortably. Many things have changed. Companies have gone back. One way of that is how they save money. We all know about, we talked about in previous shows, the trade disparity, how many of these jobs are going overseas now, mm-hmm. right? Which lowers the amount of income that certain people mm-hmm. can make because of fewer right. jobs. But also because of the benefits. Mm-hmm. My father retired from GM.
Sure.
He has a pension. He's not even right. thinking twice about his retirement.
Right.
But now, try to find a company that gives a pension. You can't find them anymore. So what companies are saying, when they go from what's called a pension, which is a defined benefit plan, mm-hmm. and say now the only focus you have is a 401k, or if you're a teacher mm-hmm. or work at a hospital, 403b, then those are defined contribution plans. So what they are saying is now we're going to take the risk off of the table from us as the corporation, and now we're going to give it to you as the employee. So now you are on your own with whatever amount of money you save, mm-hmm. That's it.
So that's fascinating to hear, because when we think about it at the macro level, mm-hmm. right? Because here we know in the United States, this issue of income inequality has such an amazing impact. There's a gap between rich and everyone else. We know it's been growing over the last 30 years. So why do you think that is occurring? I mean, obviously the example you just gave is probably one piece of a larger puzzle. So let's kind of talk a little bit about why that is the case.
First of all, if you want change, then look at the tax code.
Okay.
Through tax planning, mm-hmm. our government is able to really bring about some change. If you want companies to hire people, why don't you give them tax credits to be able to do that?
Sure.
Well, if you look back at our history, when we had times of war and we were paying for initiatives like the New Deal, then our tax rates were much higher. In fact, under Eisenhower, the top tax rate was 94%. So there are very few families who had to pay that tax, but some did. So the goal was to actually send money back down to other people, and to also incentivize corporations as well to have employees. Right. And hopefully pay them accordingly.
Well, but now we see that America's top 10% now average nearly nine times as much income as the bottom 90%.
Crazy.
Americans and Americans in the top 1% are even higher. They average over 38 times more income than the bottom 90%.
That's a big difference.
I mean, so it's just hard to kind of fathom, you know, what that means to how people live their lives, the access they have to resources, given, you know, how so many other things are crunching this middle class. It clearly is a big topic in the presidential campaign. But is there anything can be done about this stuff?
Well, first of all, we talk about this on the show as well. Who are you talking to? Who are you working with? How are you getting your information? Because also, when you look at what's really building wealth, when you look at the stock market, it's that same group of people who has over half of the wealth in the stock market. So they know where to put their money.
I see.
So it's important that everyone participates. So even if you have $50 a month, $25 a month, whatever the case may be, once you have your disposable income, you determine that number, it's important to save and put part of your savings in some type of investment vehicle, like a mutual fund, like a stock or a bond. That's where the money is. So that helps to build compound interest to help build wealth. The other part of it, so, and if you don't know anything about that aspect or about investments, call a good financial planner, someone who is hopefully a certified financial planner who can assist you. And second of all, who are you working with on your taxes? Making sure you have a good CPA. There was an article that came out that I've referenced in the past in the New York Times in the end of December of last year. And it talked about since President Obama's been in office, the tax rates for the top 10th of 1% have actually gone down by 10%. Okay, from 28 to 17%. A little bit more than 10%. But now, if you look at the bottom 99%, right, tax rates have gone up. So, and especially with that 5% range. So we're talking about people who are making $200,000 or more. People like, if you remember Joe the Plumber, who wanted to have his own business.
Right.
And he, you know, and trying to grow. These are the people that need to get some relief. And right now, they're just simply not getting the relief or the help,
right,
or the incentive to be able to move forward. And right, they're also not getting the advice. So what the New York Times talked about is for that 5%, the reason why their tax rates have actually gone up since Obama's been in office, mm-hmm, is because, mm-hmm, they don't have the same, mm-hmm, resources, meaning the same people that the other wealthier or top percentile, right, have. So that's right, something that's purely an information issue,
yeah,
and that's something that has, yeah, to change.
Well, that's a great point. You made this point earlier about the top 1% having that holds nearly half the nation's national wealth, which is invested in stocks and mutual funds. This is the point you just made. But you contrast to the fact that most of the wealth of Americans in the bottom 90% comes from their principal residences. And interestingly enough, that's an asset category that took the biggest hit during the Great Recession. These folk also hold almost three quarters of America's debt. So what does that say to the kind of strategic financial planning that average Americans have to do to sort of weather this storm? It almost seems like, how are you going to get out of it? You know, if your principal wealth was in your home and you haven't recovered from that, how does that work?
Well, you have to think differently.
Yeah.
So, again, the money's made clearly not just by having all your money in the home. The thought of American dream to own a home, that was true 60 years ago. The American dream is far different today. It should be. It should be about how much money you have, how much wealth you're able to accumulate. And that comes from saving, investing, and similar assets to what the wealthy individuals save in.
Right.
Stocks, bonds, mutual funds. You don't have to invest in something crazy or highly speculative to do very, very well financially. But it's important that you just follow the road. So even if you don't have a financial planner to talk to, if you have a wealthy uncle or aunt, mm-hmm, or someone that you trust, mm-hmm, and that may be in your family or friend, talk to them. Ask them. And it's funny, most people don't even do this. What have you done to be successful? And would you mind sharing that information with me so I can do the same things? We got to humble ourselves enough to be able, right, to do that. If not, this is going to continue to happen no matter what the tax laws change or anything else. You've got to look at what other people are doing, successful people, and who have been able to sustain through, especially if you look at over the last 10 years, and follow some of the things that they've been doing.
Yeah.
Saving, investing, doing what these people are doing, what you just mentioned, Nick.
Yeah, so that's real sage advice. And I think that's obviously there are things that individuals can do. But there seems to be a larger public policy issue when you think about the typical white family held a net worth 6 times greater than that of the typical black family at the end of the 20th century. That gap has now doubled. The wealth gap between Latino and white and Latino households has widened as well. So we're obviously, again, in this presidential election campaign, everyone's talking about tax policies and how that's going to help. But it seems like there's a public policy issue here that we have to somehow address, notwithstanding individual merits of one's strategy, how to build wealth. There's a public policy concern that, quite frankly, threatens national security, it seems. This anger that we're seeing across America, is angry white males that we see rallying and wanting change, if not overthrow even. We're approaching a place where, you know, voting matters and public policy is going to matter in terms of what options and opportunities that'll be in front of every American. That's a mouthful, I know. But what do you think about that?
No, I mean, I think you're right. But what are you going to do? You can vote.
Yes.
What's going to be the answer? I mean, do you think Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump's going to change everything overnight? No matter who wins, it's not going to happen.
Right.
So you have three options. You have your employer, you have the government, and you have yourself. Who are you going to rely on the most?
That's right.
Don't sit here and complain all the time. If you're not saving your money, if you're not trying to find wise counsel to help you, then it's just a waste of time. You've got to get your own financial house in order, and you've got to build your own foundation. And the crazy thing about it is the blueprint has already been put out there. Live beneath your means, save a little bit of money, invest it in the right places, and then you will be fine. And protect yourself against some of the perils of life that happen, like death or disability or accidents that may occur. Just make sure you protect yourself, and then you'll be more than fine. But it starts with starting now, making sure that, one, that you understand. I'm actually reminded of a Bible verse. This is Proverbs 25. Well, I'll read 24 first. It says, when you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, you will sleep. Your sleep will be sweet. And then 25 says, have no fear of certain disaster or of the ruin that overtakes the wicked. For the Lord will be at your side and will keep your foot from being snared. So even though you may see things, I've heard people, I grew up in the church, and people say, well, I've only heard, I had to wait till I hear from the Lord. Well, if you are narrow in your thinking, and the only thing you've ever done is what you've always done, what your mama's done, what your granddaddy's done, then you are going to probably end up with the same results. But how I interpret this, and not trying to preach by any means.
Oh, it's too late now, guys.
But, okay, all right.
But
well,
go ahead on. Keep going. Don't stop.
But I think this is very important, is we can't allow fear to guide us. Fear of the unknown. Fear of not being able to learn about investments, fear of not being able to get beside something that's tangible, and taking control of your own thoughts and your own actions. I do believe what you're saying is true, Nick, that the government, there are things that should be done that can certainly help. But for me, it's about what can I do today in my own house to really help and be a good guy for my family.
Well, you know, listen, that's an inspiring statement, which sort of inspires one of my favorite scriptures, which is Matthew 6:24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You can't serve God and money. And so how appropriate is that in these times?
Indeed.
So, you know, I mean, thank you for sort of righting the ship that we should be thinking about putting our faith in either of these candidates. They're individuals, they're flawed, and so are we. So we're not saying, you know, look away from the importance of public policy, but we are saying, you know, look to and look up to what's really important in your life and doing your own due diligence, right, and managing your own financial affairs will help you to even be able to build a more effective, agile strategy to handle the sort of patience that's needed to endure public policy, that whole political process, really. But we have to be engaged because it's not just about us. It's about others. It's about the communities. Because as you look at these communities, they are in complete economic disarray.
Yeah, no question, especially when we look at different ethnicities. That gap is also becoming wider and wider. And that's not good for anything. You just brought up about the Olympics, about how positive diversity can be. And that's why we are winning. Well, we need to win as a country. Everyone needs to be doing better. And that's certainly not the case.
Well, yeah, when you consider a similar, a recent Pew Foundation that found that, you know, billionaires who make up the Forbes Fortune 100 list of richest Americans now have as much wealth as all African-American households, plus one-third of Americans' Latino population combined. In other words, just 400 extremely wealthy individuals have as much wealth as 16 million African-American households and 5 million Latino households. Fascinating.
You know, I think it is fascinating. I've shared the story. I said if Bill Gates had Oprah money, he'd probably kill himself.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. In fact, you know, and I think I heard that said similarly that he cut his throat on the way down. I mean, because it's just like he could not believe it. I mean, it's just so the reality is the Great Recession, though, deepened the longstanding racial and ethnic wealth divide. The typical white family held a net worth 6 times greater than the typical black family at the end of the 20th century. And so we're still, that gap is still growing. And obviously a lot of it can be described and approached from one's individual strategy. But some of it is systemic. We're still coming from a history of segregation and historical disparities based on race and class and gender, right, that have sort of imprisoned a lot of opportunities. And so we're now, in many cases, coming out of that. But education becomes key. We did a show previously on how important is education, right?
No doubt about it.
So we are still, as a community, you know, fighting the good fight for true access and equality. And it's a longstanding challenge, and we here in this show is certainly about expressing that.
Yeah, and it's certainly about to change. And you're right, Nick. I mean, it was 6 times that amount, the disparity between black and white families then, and now it's more than double.
Right.
So it's over 12. I've been told it's about 14 times.
That's right.
That's huge. And that's not good for anybody, because if you're a business owner, you want every person in your community to do well. So that's more potential money for you.
Right.
So even for selfish reasons, you should want the mean to be a certain positive amount.
That's right. Because even if you look at the, you know, 2014 Census Bureau report, looking at medium adjusted income for households, for blacks, it was $43,300. And for whites, it was $71,300. Even among adults with a bachelor's degree, blacks earned significantly less in 2014 than whites. $83,000 for households headed by a college-educated black, compared with $106,000 compared with white households. I mean, how is that the case? You know, it's not simply explaining away by racism.
Right.
While that's clearly a factor, it's deeper. It's a sort of implicit bias in terms of treatment, in terms of access to opportunities. And it's not even sort of covert. It's not even sort of overt. It's just a sort of, a sort of disconnect from people who are different, right? And an immediate sort of bias, even around names. You know, African sounding names. There was a study in Chicago that came out that said that African sounding names with the same exact credentials and resumes were less likely to get jobs.
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen it. You know, I remember my personal bias when we're looking at employees and they have potential employees and I get a resume and has a different name that's not English, then, you know, I've caught myself and looked at it differently. So, I mean, I can see right. how that can easily happen.
Sure.
But it goes back to what you're going to do about it.
That's right.
So if you see these facts and you say, okay, these are facts, this is what's going on, mm-hmm. then what am I going to do differently? First of all, just stop trying to keep up with the Joneses.
That's right.
Right? Because they're probably making more money than you.
That's right.
Right? They probably have more and better benefits than you.
Yep.
You don't know. When I look at these numbers, I think about legacy. Because now that's $20,000 more per year compounded over a 30 or 40 year career. I'm going to be able to leave my children or my grandchildren more money. So that is the difference. So you can't count someone else's money because you don't know really where it's coming from.
That's right.
Many times they come from inheritances that mm-hmm. you know nothing about. And you, the listener, may not have that rich uncle or rich parent that may not leave you anything but debt. So therefore, if that is the case in your life, then don't feel sorry for yourself. Just deal with it and do something different. Be different for your family, for your kids that are coming behind you. Start saving and investing. You may be able to qualify for that house. It does not mean that you need to actually buy that house. Buy something that's affordable where you can actually save. Rule of thumb is you should be saving outside of your retirement. If you can save 10% of your money, 10%, that's fantastic. Rule of thumb is, you know, we pay God first, then we pay ourselves second, and then we live off the difference. And if you can't do that, if you can't look at all the maintenance and all those things that it takes to run a household, if you can't afford to save that, then you can't afford that house. And it may not be the house that you want. It may not be your dream house, but I want you to have a dream retirement. I want you to leave a dream legacy. And those are the things that we should be thinking about instead of things and tangible items alone.
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, focusing on a quality education, ensuring that that is job one in homes. And you certainly don't have to attend the sort of the most stellar school in order for it to happen. You know, you have to turn the TV off, study with your child. There are things you can do, and quite frankly, you don't need a lot of wealth to do it. I mean, you just have to really, it's a jungle out here.
Look.
And it doesn't look like it's getting any better, you know, any sooner.
No question. You have no excuse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love my time at University of Memphis,
mm-hmm.
but no one's mistaken that for Ivy League school.
Sure.
I had an opportunity to go to some great schools, but we couldn't afford them. So I would have graduated with a ton of student debt. My mother and I didn't want us to go through that. So I went to the school that paid me the most money. That was my opportunity. But you know what? When you're doing what's right, when you're trying to save and you live the right way, and when I say the right way, because I'm far from perfect, but when you're trying to save, invest, and do the right things, what's for you is for you. What God has for you, what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care where you live. So this is, I'm just a pure example of how that can work. So to your point, Nick, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter how you're starting, no matter what school you went to, it's about where are you today and what right. can you do differently to change your circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Powerful stuff, guy. So I see the kind of financial consultation your clients get when they come and sit down and talk with you. That's good financial news you can use.
Yeah, we definitely had to keep it real, Nick, because at yes. the end of the day, it's all about the results.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. That's right. What a powerful conversation we had today.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, Glenn, I think this is a conversation that we just really touched on today. We have to come back and do a bit more surgery on this conversation because there's a lot more operation that we have to do on it. So, Glenn, what do you think about that?
Man, I'm happy you said that, Nick. I agree with you 100%. There's a lot more information that we need to share. I got more I need to get out to let the listeners know. So let's do it.
Absolutely. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week.
All right.
This has been The Worth Report with your host, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright. To learn more about Worth Financial and to speak to one of their advisors, call 704-731-0121. That's 704-731-0121. Or log on to worthadvisors.com. That's worthadvisors.com.